SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, about 15 in, and just off with Patrick Biancone. Fun to catch up. Patrick's first, I hadn't realized that until I looked, first graded stake win in 8 years on Sunday. Andy Serling joins us from New York. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. I couldn't resist mentioning to Patrick as we were wrapping up. I said, your man Andy's on next. He got a big chuckle. I know one of your favorites years ago. He's a character. He's got a nice filly. How about that filly on Sunday?
A little early in the year to be too excited about turf horses winning at Gulfstream.
Well, but she's whatever, 4 for 5 and has just got beat that neck in that second start.
Does anybody show her any tapes in newspaper or record?
Not yet. They don't want to tell her about it.
They want to wait for a while.
Down the road. No, he said he's going to take his time with her. Let's. We got a bunch of things to do. We got a lot. We got the news that things are moving forward steadily toward the 5-day-a-week, 8 weeks at Saratoga. Dave O'Rourke smoothly moving forward at the helm, and then there was some interesting result going back to Saturday, and Tax, who I know you like, the Danny Gargan, what a claim, 50,000, and now a graded stake winner.
It kind of reminds me of the scene in Bananas when Woody Allen tries to buy the dirty magazines, and he goes, he wants Sports Illustrated and Newsweek and Time before he gets to the porno. He covered a lot in that. He went from the schedule, which hasn't been announced, everywhere except for Naira, Dave O'Rourke being the new president and CEO of Naira, and then right to Tax. So you covered it. Do you want to talk about any of those, or do you just want to talk about Tax?
Well, you pick up the ball and run.
Well,
wherever you want to go.
Normally, an interview questions would go a little slower, right? I don't know what the schedule is, other than what I read in the paper. Honestly, it's not something that gets greatly discussed with me. Believe it or not, I'm not intimately involved in those decisions. You know, it's been discussed for many years that we could go to 5 days a week, and we're the last holdout, right? I mean, I think there's a better argument we held out too long than it's a mistake we're doing it now. And it's always an ecosystem, and there are always people to consider. But the notion that you could spread a 40-day race meet, it's one extra week, by the way, right? They're saying it's starting on the Thursday 11th, and it will start on Friday 19th, so it's 8 days earlier, right? It's not 2 weeks, it's not a month, it's a week. The idea of spreading it out over an additional 8 days, effectively, you know, it's, I don't know the exact number, but let's say the exact number is two. Every horse in the backstretch rates to make two starts. You're dramatically increasing the number of starters you rate to get, right? You're probably rate to go to 2.3 or something, right? You probably.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, assuming the weather holds up, obviously weather's always going to be the biggest issue, but if the weather holds up, you're talking about getting almost one more starter a race. So I don't know who would argue against that from a standpoint of the quality of racing and the field size, which is always as important a factor as you could find after weather. It just makes sense, and the horse population can no longer support 6-day-a-week racing. And, you know, when I first started playing full-time in the mid-90s, and I'd already been playing, obviously, for a long time in my life, we raced 6 days a week, right? It was a big change, and we went to 5 days. And we've held out in Saratoga for a variety of reasons, but you can't sustain it anymore. And as an employee at Naira, and listen, these decisions aren't based on employees at Naira. They're based on, we're sort of the last people that should be thought of. But as an employee, it affects me in an incredibly positive way. The notion that instead of going up there and working for 46 straight days or 49 straight days, because basically start the Tuesday when the meet starts, to, you know, having an actual, you have 2 days off. You get 1 day you can get all your work caught up, and 1 day you can actually enjoy yourself. So from my perspective, I'm thrilled about it. And I hope that other people are happy about it. It's more time, but it gives people more of an opportunity to get up there, right? And I spent a lot of time up there going out in the nights, going to restaurants for dinner. It's just not that busy past Saturday, right? It's sort of Thursday, you know, a little Wednesday, but Thursday through Saturday is when it's most busy. Sunday night in restaurants are not that crowded. Mondays are always quiet. So I don't think it's going to perceptibly change that. So, I
agree.
I hope that, obviously, I care a great deal about the business in Saratoga, and I want to see them all do well. And, you know, we all work together, but I think it'll be better for them. I hope it is. I don't think it'll be worse.
I completely agree. Having seen this from a lot of different angles, the breakneck pace of the 6 day a week is,
it's rough.
I think everyone will enjoy. Yeah, everyone will enjoy the meat more.
The other thing is that everybody, and that includes people, customers, you get burned out a little bit, and it's like you barely have a time to blink, and you're back in action on Wednesday. This way, I think a lot of us, and I'm not just talking about, obviously, talking about people that work there, I think a lot of fans will be excited that we're reopening on Wednesday as opposed to it feeling like just a continuum. And a couple days off will get people a little bit antsy. You know, by Tuesday afternoon, I hope a lot of us are thinking, I can't wait to get back to the track tomorrow. And that's what you want, right? You want that anticipation. So I think, listen, you don't know until these things happen, but it's not like this came out of nowhere. I mean, this is something that has been discussed for many years, and now it's happening. And I think it'll be a positive change. I hope it is. I mean, you'll never make everybody happy with everything you do, but I think that overall this will be a positive. And I haven't heard a great deal of dissent about this. I suppose I also haven't been in Saratoga, but I mean, if anything, if I were complaining, I'd be complaining that what's taken us so long to tell is when we're starting to meet, you know, and that's, I think, you know, that's probably the most realistic complaint you'll hear from people. Anyway, on to Dave O'Rourke. Dave and I have been friendly for years working at NIRA. I'm friendly with Dave because Dave is an incredibly interested person. I mean, he's an unusual person in that he comes from completely outside of racing, but he was drawn to it. And one of the reasons that he forced himself to suffer through sharing an office with me in Saratoga for the past, I think, 5 or 6 years is because he wanted, and believe me, having to spend time around me is suffering, as anybody that knows me knows, as you know, especially in Saratoga, where I can be really at my craziest, is because Dave wanted to know things that were going on around the track. Even though, you know, his job wasn't necessarily on the racing end of things, he wanted to be close to things that were happening in the track so I could tell him things that were going on, whether it was a controversial inquiry or something that happened in a race or some betting situation or something. Dave sort of wanted to have a perspective. And this is an unusual quality in somebody in racing that comes from outside, immediately grasping the big picture of it and trying to learn as much of it as he could, whether he was spending time with Martin or Glenn Kozak or different people. And Dave has always been a sponge in trying to learn these things, and a very much a quiet guy sort of behind the scenes, but incredibly talented and qualified. And I think that a lot of people will see Dave now that he has that role, especially in Saratoga, and they'll say, oh, I know that guy, because Dave's around. He just sort of plays things quietly, and now he obviously has a very public position. But I think it's a big positive for not just NIRA, but for racing in general, to have somebody like Dave O'Rourke. So I think this is going to be a very, very, I don't think it is, I know it is. I know this is a very, very, very qualified and good person, and somebody that I believe that people in time will find extremely accessible. There are people that don't even realize, they won't realize until they see Dave that they've probably had a conversation with him somewhere. And I think he's just going to be incredibly accessible, and it's going to be a very big positive for everybody. Dave is a listener. He's somebody who's very much doesn't just form opinions. He listens to both sides before he forms his opinion on them. I think he keeps a fluid opinion on things. So I think it's a positive having Dave there.
Well, and
you
really
can get him on your show sometime and talk to him.
Oh, absolutely. The timing, the timing actually, and I mentioned this last week when everything was happening, Dave has been doing a lot of the strategic long-term planning for what is going to have to transpire, what's already transpiring at Saratoga with the new building and what's going to happen at Belmont. And, I mean, he's really been doing that. And Chris Kay was running interference with Albany, but it's been – Dave O'Rourke's been running the day-to-day portion as an executive for years.
What Chris did. I don't think that's
but I'm just saying it's true.
Well, Dave, yeah, I mean, listen, there are a lot of people at NIRA that are running the day-to-day things, and I don't want to compliment one at the exclusion of the others. And I think the quality that's made Dave a leader in this company, and I think you could ask a lot of people this, and they would agree, is that he's somebody who believes that if he hires somebody qualified, he doesn't need to be breathing down that person's neck. You get somebody qualified, and they do their jobs, and he's very supportive of people underneath him and wanting people to succeed. And that's a very important quality in any kind of leader, is that you feel you found the right people and you give them their best chance to succeed, and you want them to succeed. And a lot of people have succeeded. I mean, Dave's been in charge of the TV department for, I'm going to say, it's hard to remember, you know, probably the last 6 years, 5 or 6 years. And I think, you know, he's not a hands-on in charge of it, because there's other people, whether it's Tony Alabato, who's been there, about 3 or 4 years now. I'm underneath, and, you know, people like Eric Donovan who moved up and doing a great job in the department. But Dave is a very positive influence on the people underneath him. And he also doesn't see them as underneath him, which I think is a very important quality. I think he sees everybody as working together.
No doubt. No doubt. We wish him well and looking forward to having him on. And let's turn our attention to the racing action. Certainly the Withers had an interesting cast coming in. And in some ways, maybe the most intriguing horse comes out. The three preps, the TV broadcast, people might have hoped people watched on Saturday and got a chance to see all three of the Withers,
the Fox Star, Fox Sports, Saturday the race. We're on a Saturday too. Showing Sam Davis and other assorted stakes. I'm not exactly sure what we're covering, but hopefully someone will tell me tomorrow. The funny thing about the Withers is it was a fast race. Now, I think it's been very difficult for any speed figure maker this winter, especially at Aqueduct, because it does seem like, I don't know if the track changes a lot. I don't know exactly. But I know there are a lot of numbers that are coming up fast, and they're legitimately fast based on the times, and sometimes they're a little bit tough to take. Now, I don't think the 96 for this race is hugely difficult to take based on just tacks. If tacks had won this race by 3 or 4 lengths, I would say, yeah, it's perfectly believable. But when you have three horses go off the track and it gets a pretty strong number, all things considered, and, you know, the third horse, where did that race come from? And the second horse, Not That Brady, he ran huge. I mean, he was clearly best in there if he had broken sharply. And I thought Ray would give him a very good ride there under difficult circumstances. He ran, for him to have run that well, first time around 2 turns under the circumstances, it's a little bit tough to take. So you do want to see these horses come back. I do think that they're okay, those horses. And listen, I don't know where things stand, but Tax is a player. He ran very well in the Remsen. Now, if somebody wants to knock the Remsen because Maximus Mischief didn't run well in Florida, well, that's ridiculous, because we've already seen, I think, the fifth-place finisher come back with a big win. We saw the fourth-place finisher, Mark Hennig's horse, come back with a nice win in Florida and
prove
his figure. So I don't, you know, now we've seen Tax do this. I think that race has proven itself to be unusually strong this year. We haven't obviously seen the second-place finisher come back. I think Maximus Mischief's performance, seeing he got hot down there, and I think of Maximus Mischief in the Holy Bull, he was faced with a circumstance he had never faced before. He was forced to chase a fast pace. His only real challenge in a 2-turn race was the Remsen, where he had the run of the race, right, sitting on top of a very moderate pace, which Tax had the benefit of as well. But Maximus Mischief, it really played into his hands, whereas this was a very different circumstance. He had to wait or chase a quick pace, and he didn't respond particularly well. He also may have just gotten hot and not been particularly comfortable down there. He's run well enough that I think it's fair to give him another chance. But I also think there's a reasonable question whether there's a chink in his armor. And he doesn't exactly have a pedigree that's screaming, you know, long distance. So maybe that kind of caught up to him at some point. He's talented, but he didn't run well in this race. Whether it was external events or not, I don't know. But I do know that Tax ran reasonably well. You know, his stumble was insignificant. He got good position. He got a very good ride from junior thereafter. I want to see what these horses do going further. And I think from a prep standpoint, you saw three horses that put themselves as potential contenders. And I think that's all you can expect from preps, especially 3 months out. These are all horses that may or may not be a player as we get closer to the Derby. I wouldn't rule any of them out. I'm not saying I'm hugely excited about any of them, though I do think Tax has some potential.
Talked to Danny Gargan yesterday, and Danny, you know, Danny deserves a tremendous amount of credit. He picked this horse out.
Forget about his training job. I mean, the fact that he saw this horse and saw this horse to claim, and I know he talked to Maggie, and he sort of said he was probably thinking more turf going forward. Well, I don't think we're going to see him on the turf, if ever, but certainly any time in the relatively near or even distant future. This is a horse right now that has the potential to be a real player on the Derby trail, and that's exciting. And Danny did a great job with Divine Miss Gray last year, and he's got another chance at this level. And these are the kind of races that catch a lot of attention.
No, and the ownership team that came together, the people that got involved in this, really fun people that
Randy's involved, right? And Dean Reeves involved, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Both good guys, and both guys that big supporters of the game. You like to see big people time. That are big supporters of the game do well.
Absolutely. A couple of other thoughts about what went on. You had the big price at Oaklawn that boosted the new Pick 5, the cross-country Pick 5, which will be offered every Saturday.
Well, I don't know. Are we offering a Pick 5 every Saturday? I don't know exactly.
Yes.
We announced that we're doing every Saturday.
Yes.
I know there's some Pick 4s, too, they were talking about, and that was always...
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, I hope people get involved going forward. I know that, you know... I'm sure as the races maybe get a little sexier, things will be a little stronger in it. But yeah, they're probably about, I'm trying to think what was bad, I think Taylor 15%, so it was about 6 winning tickets, right? Pay 5,700 or something, 50 cents?
Yeah, I've got it here.
I'm sure there was. Yeah, there was.
That makes sense, because it was 33 and change, and you know, people only knew about it, you know, 24,
right,
maybe
48 hours in advance. It'd be nice. To
yeah.
Well, now they'll know more time in advance.
Exactly. What did you think of the other two? I know we had the wet track in California, but any
no
thoughts about
that race?
Okay, and then how about down in Florida? You mentioned Maximus. That Harvey Wallbanger debuted at Saratoga, and Harold Lerner had been on TV with Seth and I, and they had high hopes from day one for him.
Yeah, the clockers thought he was okay. I love seeing Harold do well. He's a terrific guy. So that was nice. How good he is, I don't know. He got a great ride by Brian Hernandez. It came up a kind of a slow race, so I'm not a fan of winners of slow races, and it felt like it just sort of fell apart at the end. He may be a nice horse. He seems like a nice horse, and I don't know. It's hard to take him overly seriously as a Derby contender at this point. He got pretty good circumstances and didn't run a particularly fast race, but he could take another step forward, I guess. So I hope he does for Harold's sake. He's not a horse that I would be particularly endorsing now, but I'm not particularly endorsing any horses right now.
You did have the two sprint wins. The Forward Gal return for Feedback was very nice, and Call Paul was determined, a bit of a determined winner, I would call
it. Well, he also got wet. I mean, it's very hard to watch these races at Gulfstream, the 7-furlong and a mile race, because you can't see the start. Head-ons of start, showing only head-ons of starts is something I really wish that we could do something about. Churchill does the two with those races, and I just hate it. I just think it's patently unfair. There's nothing more important than seeing a pan of a start, because you don't have any depth perception. You don't really know how badly horses got left. So this horse clearly got left. How badly, I don't know. He ran okay. He's a nice horse, Call Paul. He was 3-2 for a reason. I thought he was the horse to beat as well. I don't... I mean, of the two, he and Feedback ran very similar times. I mean, Feedback probably more impressive because not only was she making her second career start and it was off a six-month layoff, but she was also on top of a fairly quick pace where the horse is sort of the second choice that she took over from, finished last. So I think that overall she's the more impressive of the two. You know, whether or not she's going to want to go farther is always the big question, right? Is she more of a test horse, or is she, hopefully she's that good, or is she a horse that can go forward to Kentucky Oaks? I'm sure they're hoping she can. Obviously, I'd like to see her do well, but she has a lot of, she has a lot of potential. I mean, before we saw Jaywalk, right, she was the most impressive filly two-year-old we saw in Saratoga. She was the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
She never had any issues. She just got sick a couple times. She never really wasn't. She wasn't off because she had issues as much as just getting sick at very inopportune times and missing physic training, which is why she missed the Frisette and ultimately the Breeders' Cup as well.
Well, beside the Withers action, just reviewing what went on. Couple of days since we talked. Did I miss anything from...
Well, the Busanda. I mean, the Sunday, was unusual at Aqueduct because we had a super, super gold rail. And, I mean, anybody that looks at the track trends or has just been following Aqueduct in general knows that we've been dealing with fair racetracks the entire meet. We haven't had one track that was... I think there was one day, a couple of days where I thought the rail was good. Maybe one, but nothing. In other words, short of a huge bias... This was an extreme bias. It was extraordinary, and it dramatically affected the results of the Busanda. And while obviously Philly Joel was second, spent much of the race in the rail, did have to work very hard the first quarter to 3/8 around a turn to secure that position. So Philly Joel ran the best race, and the winner got a very opportune scenario where she drew the rail, and she could just sort of hug the rail the whole way and then angle out and stretch. Not take anything away from the winner. She was a maiden. She may be okay. I don't know. But I think the horse that ran the best race was Philly Joel. I don't think she was. I know that Philly Joel ran the best race. But I also, if you're somebody who thought the Miss Maryland, the Gargan horse, if you're interested in that horse, well, that horse chased three wide the whole way. So I would recommend to people that they pay attention to the results from Sunday, because horses that chased wide were dramatically compromised. Probably not a bias that's going to persist, being that we hadn't seen it all meet. Not exactly sure where it came from. It's supposed to rain, I think, Wednesday night into Thursday, so I don't think we'll see it again on Thursday.
Had a couple of older maiden winners over the weekend. They had on Friday that Sam and Jack's win for Chad. He also got the diploma for Motigali as well.
Sam and Jacks look good.
Yeah.
Sam and Jacks, so which they bought almost 2 years ago, a two-year-old sale, and it worked very impressively. And took a while to hit the track, but that was, I got an 82 buyer, was on top of the pace, where the pace setter was like the second choice, got beaten 20 lengths, and won easily in there. Motigali has improved. I don't know how good he is, but he improved. Was a couple seconds slower than the Withers, right?
Yes.
So probably a figure of somewhere around 80 at most.
79. Yeah. You know who ran that race, that second level allowance, Mile, that preservationist Hammer and Hammer.
What number did that race get?
97.
That's preservation. It's a number. It's gotten that a number a couple of times, two, three times, right? He sort of struggled to get by those horses. But if it came for a reasonably fast race, then it's probably okay. I'm sure he'll get massively overrated like every Centennial horse. They're like
easy,
the new West.
Easy.
I like Centennial people, but their horses, my God. I'm interested to see what Mios does in the next time. I don't know. I'm not sure why that horse was under pretty much a ride the entire way. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe those were the instructions. I don't know. Maybe Johnny felt he had. I don't know why. But he just seemed like a surprising ride. I mean, he didn't run particularly well, but maybe he's a horse that would have been better off if they just let him find his spot in the back of the pack and make a run. I don't know. I'd be inclined to want to give him another chance going forward.
Well, the racing coming forward, speaking of looking ahead, Thursday's card, the 3rd, the 5th, and the 7th. You got two state bred races early on. That 7 furlong maiden race for older horses actually is interesting. And then the two allowances. There's the money allowance feature. The 7th is terrific. And the first level allowance going a mile is excellent. What I know you've done the work for Thursday.
Yeah, not that much.
Okay.
I haven't finished Thursday, and I'm have the work done on Friday, but I haven't done the handicapping, so I'm a little behind. Right. Well, I'm kind of vegetating.
Is it warm out? Can look forward. It's been nice. It finally, the cold finally broke.
Yeah, it's nice here. It's in the 50s, I think.
Yeah, the last 2 days, the last 48 hours, we finally, the grips of,
the
death grips of cold.
You come down from the high of the Super Bowl yet?
Oh, believe me. Well, watching, I tried to ward you toward the Colgate-Lehigh game, but it was
when you told me it was up 30, it didn't really do a lot to get me to want to watch.
No.
I don't know why.
Hung on. They manhandled them. And they beat them twice this year, they don't want to see them in the
I didn't know, but thanks.
The playoffs. They don't want to see them. They don't want to. You don't want to. I don't think you want to see the Maroon. The Maroon Marauders of the Shenango Valley in the Patriot League tournament.
I thought they were Didn't they have another? Was their name objectionable? Weren't they the Red Raiders?
Red Raiders. Yes.
Did that name become objectionable?
Well, it's a funny story. There were only two programs in the country that had Red Raiders, Colgate and Texas Tech. And the Red, at some point in the, 40s and 50s, there was a bit of an Indian mascot. But it was not originally, as opposed to places that had Indians, actual Indians, as their mascot. The Red Raider.
I refer to their colors. I mean, I'm not.
It did.
I try to be as sensitive as anybody, but
it never was an Indian.
Okay.
Yeah. It never was. It was in the 20s when they were a national powerhouse. A sports writer in New York referred to them as the Red Raiders of Colgate because they had maroon stripes down the pants.
Gotcha.
And that's where it came from. And it, believe me, alumni of my ilk and age were not happy to have the red struck from the logo.
I know a number of people that are older than me that went to Colgate. One of them is a judge upstate, a little south of Saratoga. Lehigh used to be the engineers, right? But they're not
yes.
anymore, right?
The
I really kept
Hawks.
Up on my alma mater.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because last night when somebody said, Steve, Colgate and Lehigh is on TV today on the CBS Sports Network, and then Chuck actually said something about the engineers, about the train, and I said, they're no longer the engineers; it's now the Mountain Hawks. And there's also somebody else that said they went to Susquehanna; they changed their name from Crusader to River Hawk. And I brought up Binghamton, which went from the Colonials to the idiotic Bearcats. I don't get it. Stick to the script,
Does it really matter?
Well, it just, there's a heritage. There's a certain heritage that I could see why alumni get upset.
Okay. I mean, I don't know.
We should ask one of the most prominent horse owners in the game.
There you go.
Mike Caruso, we should reach out to.
Very involved in the wrestling program. Still, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest.
Is he involved in Call Paul?
He is in Call Paul, sure. Absolutely.
Well, have him on.
Mike Caruso, and I've said this before, he's been on the show once before, and Mike, who is in the insurance business, one of the greatest schoolboy wrestlers in American history. was beaten once in his high school and college, entire college career, was beaten once.
Is that right? Once.
That is correct.
Wow.
I believe he was unbeaten in high school and lost once at Lehigh.
Was he on a national championship team at Lehigh? Probably was, right?
I would imagine.
Maybe than once.
Yeah, he was devastated.
I didn't make
the Hall of Fame.
I didn't make the wrestling team.
You could actually.
I missed the tryouts.
You've got the build of a
requires getting off the couch, you know. Steve.
wrestlers
actually and jockeys have a lot in common, right?
Big time. Sure, Tony Black and Jeremy Rose, and there's all Drayden Van Dyke.
Well, it's a weight thing, right? Because of the weight situations. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, my friend John used to talk about that because he wrestled. All right. There's got to be something more interesting to talk about with somebody else. Who's up next?
Keith Shamblin joining us from NTRA.
Oh, tell Keith I said hi.
I will do that, and then John White and Jeremy Plunk.
All right. Have fun. Later.
Andy, I appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody. The New York Racing Association. Racing resumes Thursday, and it's a good card. It's rare that I've done more work on a card than Andy. That is a few and far between. But the seventh race is a 1 mile, $100,000 optional, you know, basically a money allowance, big purse, and some nice stake type horses lined up, including Stan the Man, coming off an allowance win. He's cutting back. Exulting for Kieran. Gary's got to hit it once more. Solid Wager comes back off that toboggan win for Chris Englehart, who's going to stretch out. It's kind of interesting that, in fact, that, you know, we talked to Chris after the toboggan win, and, you know, he talked about maybe the General George. They had had a couple of things, but the fact that they're stretching out to a mile in this spot says that they've maybe got something else in mind going forward for him. So we'll see. Backside of the Moon, who's been so good for Leo O'Brien, $400,000 in earnings for Lake Lonely Racing. That nice holiday bonus for David Canizzo kind of hit the wall a little bit in the Jazzle, but certainly has been very solid. It's a nice group, and there's also the State Breds that are going the 1 mile in the fifth. And this is really good. A lot of good three-year-olds in here. Roddy Valenti with Stonebreaker, the homebred. You got Southern King for Pletcher coming out of the Damon Runyon New Year's Eve. Beachside, probably the horse to beat for Linda Rice and Barry Schwartz. And kind of interesting, Bruce Brown has got Hushin. It'd be funny if Hushin were to beat the Barry Schwartz. So, good card. And there's also a maiden race, the third, with eight horses, that older horses, that looks okay in here. So, good card Thursday in New York. Let's take a break, come back. I mentioned Keith Shamblin. We're going to do a little bit of NHC Advance, what you need to know heading to Las Vegas. I want to get the details of the play-in, you know, the last chance contest on Thursday. And basically, you know, those of you that are getting ready, maybe your first time, what do you need to know? Keith will tell you. Back after this. John White, top of the hour, a little past the top of the hour, and Jeremy Plonkett as well. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Listos.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down in my mind. She runs throughout the night, no need to fight, never a frown with golden brown. Every time, just like the last, on the ship, tied to a mast, two distant lands, takes both my hands, never a frown, with golden brown.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. John Whitehead as well as Jeremy Plonk. Right now, though, Keith Shamblin is going to join us from the NTRA. And, of course, hours away, I leave tomorrow for Vegas and start broadcasting Thursday. Thursday through Monday, we'll be there, and we will crown another champion. I can't say new. I mean, I guess that Chris Littlemore could certainly repeat, and we're still looking for our first two-time NHC winner, but there's a lot of storylines, and there's probably some information for those of you that are first-time NHC attendees. You probably are getting antsy and curious and excited. There's the play-in as well to talk about, and Keith Shamblin joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And, you know, one thing I could say about January and February, you know, a lot of people, they start the year, they kind of wade into the action. Certainly when it comes to the Triple Crown Trail, you know, we kind of get things slowly started in January, but not at the NTRA, the Eclipse Awards, and then weeks later, the NHC. This is like the most intense period of the year for you.
It is, but it's the most fun time of year for me. I'll tell you, I love it. And you were talking about new people, you know, first-timers attending the NHC. I just looked up the stats earlier this morning. 118 first-time qualifiers. That represents about 23% of the field, depending on what happens on Thursday in the last chance tournament. But we'll have at least 118 rookies playing. So it should be very exciting for those individuals here at the NHC starting on Friday.
And that's one of the storylines that was coming out of last year, which was the expansion of the field, the growth of the field, and the extra space necessary to accommodate the NHC at Treasure Island. What do we expect for a total field size?
Well, I think we're right at 670 entries right now, and of course we'll see what happens on Thursday in the last chance, but we ought to add at least another, I'd say, 5 to 10 players. So I think we're going to end up at about 680 entries. We've got about 140 double qualifiers. So another full field won't be a record, but it'll be very, very close to last year. The purse be a total prize money of about $2.9 million, down slightly from last year. But again, this will be the second highest purse in history, and of course, $800,000 to the winner. And Dave Gutfriend, who's one of the best handicappers in America, if not the world, will be playing for a record $6.8 million if he were to take down the NHC this weekend. So should be fun. He's got, he won our tour this year, so he was eligible for a $5 million bonus. Then he won his NHC spot at Hawthorne, which put up another $1 million bonus if he wins. So going to be a very, very exciting weekend for Dave Gutfriend, and be interesting. He could do it. He's definitely one of the favorites in the field each and every year, and that'd be a great storyline if he were to pull it off.
No doubt. And, if there is perhaps the most publicized story of the recent, let's say, 4 months, it is the return to the scene by Gutfriend, because he made a very well-documented and public declaration that he was moving to poker, and then had the kind of a sobering experience. Not that he didn't do well, but he did very well, but he also recognized some of the things that he had been frustrated about in racing. He had similar, I suppose, experience or epiphany about the poker side of things, and he came back. And not only did he come back, he came back like a house of fire.
He sure did. I'll tell you, he tiptoed in. In terms of tournament play, he tiptoed in. He didn't play in that many contests this year,
right,
but it seemed like he won every one that he played in. So just absolutely amazing. And I'm glad to have him back. I mean, Dave is he certainly lets you know where he stands on the issues, and he's a controversial individual, but I think he's good for the game, and I know he's good for the NHC, and he'd be a great champion if he were to pull it off. So rooting for him, and of course, would love to have a rookie win. That would be a great story as well. But we've also got let's see here. We've got seven returning champions and seven tour champions that'll be part of the field. So, and I know I was looking at the odds down in the race book, because you can bet on yourself here at the NHC, and the field is the favorite, but the individuals who are favored are the Matisse brothers, both Paul and Duke, and Jonathan Kenchen are all 40-1 on the odds board down in the racing sports book. So, and I think those are solid favorites. If you when you look at the field each and every year, you have to put a check mark next to obviously Jonathan, but also the Matisse brothers are, as you know, two of the best handicappers in the world. So it can be a very, very strong field, competitive, and just a great atmosphere. Looking forward to having you out here once again. And that just adds to the atmosphere, and should be a great weekend if you're a horse player.
Let's lay out the schedule, and for those that may be either in the area or might be, L.A., San Diego, that had been toying with coming to Vegas, that didn't get a seat yet. Explain what we've got on Thursday and the format for the play-in.
Sure. They've got a last-chance tournament here on Thursday at the Treasure Island. It'll start at around 9 a.m., and it'll go until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It'll go through part of the Santa Anita card, and then it'll conclude, but it's guaranteed 5 NHC spots will be given away for this year. And then you could also, for players that have already qualified for this year, they could play to win other seats that are good for next year's NHC. So, you know, we fully expect to have, you know, 300 players or more playing here at the TI. And, of course, those last chance spots, I'm guessing we'll give away about 10 in all. And that's it, though. Thursday's your last shot. So if you're in the area, come on out to the TI on Thursday and get here early. And that'll be it. We'll have the field completed, the purse money, everything. We'll know where we stand Thursday afternoon. We have a question and answer session for that evening, and then a kind of a celebration welcome cocktail party that evening. But it all gets underway very early on Thursday morning out here at the TI, and that's always a fun event, and a lot of people yelling at the TV screens trying to win one of those coveted spots into the NHC on the eve of the NHC.
Well, and of course, nobody, when it comes to yelling at TVs, nobody does it better than Roger Cetina, the greatest single rooter that you will ever see. Looking forward to this.
He's one of the best, too. Roger is one heck of a player, and he is destined to be in the Hall of Fame someday at the NHC. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this year's inductees, the late, great Brian Wagner, who won the 2009 NHC Tour, and then Trey Styles, who's another just guy who's there each and every year. He's qualified 16 consecutive years to the NHC. That's a pretty amazing feat when you think about it, to be that consistent year in and year out, and just an amazing contest player. So we'll be honoring them on Sunday night, and should be a great, looking forward to a great weekend.
You know, you should mention, the passing, we should also acknowledge, and I'm sure there'll be reference made to the passing of John Rowe, and you know, one of the really remarkable stories from last year. Rowe suffering from cancer and having lost a son, and makes it to the final table. It was just inspirational, and just 4 weeks ago we lost John.
And that was a great story last year. He almost made it all the way to the top. It was pretty amazing run, but he will be missed.
Keith, the format, any changes? Let's give everybody an idea of how things unfold Friday and playing toward Saturday and playing toward the final table. Give everybody the lay of the land.
Yeah, you know, no major changes. The biggest change this year really is have more to do with the seating. We're in a brand new ballroom just below the main ballroom, so we'll be on two different levels of the Treasure Island, which I think I'm going to have my running shoes on to be going back and forth quite a bit. Much more space, that is going to provide us with an opportunity to allow friends, spouses, guests, players to sit with them in the ballroom and be part of the action. They've always been, because we've been so tight on seating in past years, we haven't been able to allow friends and spouses and guests to come in and be part of the NHC experience. And frankly, what I kept explaining to the TI was, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. These are horse players too, and they want to come in, and they want to watch, and they want to wager on the races and enjoy the competition and be a part of it and root their family or friends on, and this year they're going to be able to. Everybody will be able to bring one guest in, have them be seated with them. Again, it's because we've grown to two different ballrooms, and that'll be interesting to see how that whole dynamic plays out. I think, you know, hopefully everybody will be respectful of the participants in the NHC. But I also think, you know, it's just going to create a lot more energy in both ballrooms. So looking forward to that. We've got some new rules that have been put in this year relating to collusion, which has obviously been a hot topic since the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge of 2 years ago. You know, we're going to be posting all of the selections after the event. They'll all be available online for people to view. Of course, a little bit different because we're just Mythical Win Place wagering on 18 races on both Friday and Saturday. You know, it's not like the superfectas and all the different types of wagers you can play at the BCBC. But again, you know, we're going to be watching play, and you know, we don't want to do anything to you know, stymie conversation, the camaraderie, the discussion among friends about making selections and who people like in each and every race. But we do want to make sure that, you know, when an individual participant, at the end of the day, they need to make their own choices, their own selections, their own plays as it relates to who they're playing in the contest. And we'll be focused on that. And then, for the most part, everything is virtually the same as past years. Not a whole lot of changes in the format. We're very comfortable with where we're at with the overall contest format. We talk immediately after the event each year with the players' committee, and you know, everybody seems to think this is a very, very fair way to select our horse player of the year. And no real changes. We'll have a cut line of the top 10% at the conclusion of day two. That's what everybody will be playing for. I believe last year the cut line was right at about $175. And that's what everybody should be gunning for, to be somewhere in that neighborhood at the end of day two. And if you are, you're going to be right near the cut line, which is also the money line going into day three. Everybody who makes in the top 10% after day two will make the money line. And, of course, that'll be very exciting. And then come Sunday, we'll have the consolation contest, just as we've had in some previous years. That'll be right alongside the semifinal round, and then of course Sunday afternoon we'll cut down to the final table, top 10 players move to the final table for seven races, and then we'll crown our champion.
Well, and can't wait. Of course, it builds up and the excitement toward the final table. And I should ask as well, do we know yet what tracks those decisions will be announced when?
Those decisions will be announced tomorrow on exactly, but it'll be the same tracks as previous years that we've used. It'll be, I don't have the list right here in front of me, but it'll be Aqueduct, Gulfstream Park, Fairgrounds, Oaklawn, Santa Anita, and Golden Gate, and I believe Laurel is who I'm leaving out. So Laurel would also be in there. So eight different tracks, same as previous years. We'll have the mandatory race committee. It'll be meeting tomorrow afternoon to select the mandatory races. We're going to release those as soon as we have them. The players will have them. We're not going to hold them. We're going to get them right out the door so people can begin to focus on those eight mandatory races that have to be played on Friday and Saturday. So stay tuned for that information as well, which will be coming out Thursday morning at the latest, and hopefully Wednesday afternoon.
And I'm just looking ahead. Actually, the other track we missed was Tampa. Tampa's that eighth track.
Tampa, there you go, Tampa.
Well, looking at Friday weather, Saturday weather, actually, which once in a while that has been an issue, but right now the advanced forecasts all look good, and doesn't appear that there's going to be anything that could interfere. That's a real positive looking ahead to Friday.
Thank goodness we didn't have this contest last weekend.
Yep.
You know. But, it looks like my first glance at the weather forecast looked pretty promising. So hopefully we can keep things dry, keep all the turf races on the grass and fast tracks, main tracks, and that way we can, determine it be fair and consistent racing across the board. And that's what we like to see.
Well, if any participants, Keith, last minute concerns or anything for contact to get a hold of you or Michelle, and anything that we can pass along to players that are making their way toward Vegas, anything else?
I think we're good. We're looking forward to having you out here, and we're looking forward to having another huge weekend, and the contest play. We're starting the road to the 2020 NHC. Begins next Friday with a $75 tournament on horseplayers.com. We posted that yesterday, and we're putting out a release today, so people are already joining the tour. You have to be a tour member to be eligible to go to the NHC, but just as quickly as we crown a champion here this coming Sunday, it's the road to the 2020 NHC begins just a few days later, and we'll do it all over again.
Keith Shamblin, everybody, NTRA, and the NHC, hashtag NHC19, and we are looking forward to it. Our fifth year in Vegas at Treasure Island, the beautifully remodeled and new ballroom added as well. They've completely redone the convention facilities. The photos look great, and that second ballroom, which I think is on the pool level, and that might be the place to be.
It's where a lot of people like to be, and the winner could come out of that room come Sunday afternoon. Find out.
Well, we can't wait to see you, Keith. I appreciate this, and everybody that's making your way, and some of you that are already there listening right now, plenty of people get their days ahead, the time acclimation, and get familiar, get comfortable. That's one of the real challenges, flying in on Thursday and adjusting to the time. It's an overwhelming experience. A lot of first-year players are just kind of it washes over them a little bit, and it can be overwhelming. So those that arrive early and get acclimated, that we've heard how that much that helps, and we will see everybody certainly by Friday, but also Thursday, where we'll start broadcasting 6 a.m. In the ballroom. And Keith, look forward to it, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Safe travels, and safe travels to all the participants. We'll see you in Vegas in just a couple of days.
Treasure Island, TI Vegas on Twitter, and of course NTRA, and we'll be starting Thursday morning. Back after this, though, John White joins us. We'll get some more weekend action from Santa Anita, get John's thoughts about Omaha Beach and Battle of Midway, McKenzie, Mucho Gusto, and what's next now. Maybe there's some updates on Nolo Contesto and how John Sadler is going to go forward. And also we should note, I don't know if you, did everybody notice the natural hat trick that Doug O'Neill had? The Doug O'Neill pick three? Yeah. Doug, that Bizwax finally got a maiden win. I've been a fan and finally got the diploma, part of a Doug O'Neill troika. Timeout here. John White next. Jeremy Plonk after on this Tuesday, which is really zip by. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.